Okay, this class is a little bit different from a couple of the others in a couple of ways. Number one, we're splitting up, and I'm going to try to cover some of the basic material in both classes, but obviously on some of these topics, the way I want to address it with you will be different than the way I want to address it with 13, 14, 18-year-olds. And that caused a little bit of a challenge in preparing the visuals. Dave was constantly appropriately telling me all these wonderful things he could do, and I was sitting there thinking, but I want to do a little different with you than I want to do with the kids. So we, in a very loving and kind and brotherly manner, worked that all out. And I think we've got the presentation is flexible enough, I can use it in both places, but leaves me enough flexibility. Because, for instance, this morning we're going to talk about selecting a mate. Well, I'm going to talk to them a little bit differently than those of you who've already done that. You know, you can tell me your war stories. They're full of idealism. But I would like to also approach this class and some of that I have with you not simply about how to select a mate, because don't assume you're never going to do that again. The world is full of people who thought they had done it once and they'd never have to do it again, and because of death or some tragedy, found themselves in a position of doing it again. And let's also not delude ourselves. We get older, but that does not equate to getting wiser, especially when it comes to matters of the heart. And 75-year-old people are just as foolish as 15-year-old people when it comes to love. Maybe more so, because loneliness can be more of an issue. If you're married, I hope you never have to select another mate. But statistics tell us that some in this room are going to have to decide that in one way or the other. But having said that, I want to approach this class from the standpoint of also how can we help each other share ideas to teach the young about this very important process. So I want to approach you with a twofold mission. Maybe some wisdom on how to select our mates, but also some wisdom on how to teach younger people how to do it. Whereas this afternoon, I'll probably not spend much time on teaching younger people to do it. I'll be trying to do that. But we'll approach it quite differently. The other thing I wanted to go back, and I knew this would happen, and I welcome it, and I relish it. I had three or four good comments and questions after my session yesterday, and I want to go back and address some of those, and then give you a chance to make a comment. The first one that I was asked to comment on is a passage found in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15. And I believe this might have come up in the context of when we were talking about a woman's responsibility and submission, and the husband loving the wife as Christ loved the church. But and we touched a little bit upon Adam and Eve's sin. Well, in 1 Timothy chapter 2, Paul is talking there about the roles of men and women. And in verse 11, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. And I made a comment that my understanding of that passage is not learning in muteness, but learning in meekness and quietness. But that's a good admonition for the men also. We're all to be meek. And then he goes on in that passage, suffer not the woman to teach nor usurp authority over the man, but be in silence. That really isn't our topic. If you want to ask about that, we can, but that's not our topic. But in verse 14 it said, Adam was not deceived, but woman being deceived was in the transgression. In other words, there seems to have been a difference. Adam and Eve both sinned, but there seems to have been a difference. And I expressed my opinion on that yesterday. I think Eve probably was legitimately deceived. Adam probably wasn't deceived, but he went ahead and sinned. Well, if we sin, whether it's vis-a-vis deception or vis-a-vis willful, presumptuous sin, it's still wrong, but there is a difference maybe in the way it is addressed and in the remedial actions. Now to the question. Verse 15, notwithstanding she, and I understand this to be woman, shall be saved in childbearing if they continue in faith and charity and holiness with sobriety. And if I understand the question really has to do is usually along the lines, is childbearing an essential part of a woman being saved? And I think, at least I'll give you my take on it and then open it up. I don't think that that's the meaning or the intent of this verse at all. Otherwise, I don't know how to explain women like Hannah in the first chapter of 1 Samuel, who appears to have been a righteous and godly woman, but yet she hadn't been able to have children. I think if Hannah had been taken in death prior to Samuel being born, that would not have affected her salvation at all. I equate this back to the passages that we have in Genesis chapter 3, where it talks about where the concept of childbearing is instituted on the woman. But in the verse just prior to that, it talks about how the seed of the woman will, and the bruising of Satan and of his head. I view this passage in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, that women do in general have this role of bearing the children. We don't all, any of us disagree with that. And it was through this role that the Word was going to become incarnate. Incarnate simply meaning in the flesh. So it was through that role of childbirth, vis-a-vis Mary specifically, that Jesus came to this earth. And it's through that we are saved. But also notice the last half of that verse, just because children are born doesn't mean there's salvation if they continue in faith, charity, and holiness with sobriety. And for most of us, this probably isn't an issue, but occasionally I will, and I'm sure you have, encountered women who are unable to have children and will ask, does that affect their ability to be saved? And my answer is absolutely not, as I understand the scriptures. Now, if one chooses not to have children for selfish reasons, that may be another issue, but that's not an issue of childbearing, that's an issue of selfishness. Lee?
I have heard it said, so this is not just for me, that verse on salvation through childbearing could refer to the bearing of Christ.
Yes, and that tends to be my position on that. Okay. I'm sorry, say that again. Sure. Salvation for mankind would come through the bearing of Christ, but our personal salvation is contingent upon that conditional clause, as I see it. Okay. I don't want to spend more time on that than you want, but it was a good question. It came up, and whoever asked that, if that's not satisfactory to you and you want to ask me more about it, that's fine. A second comment that was made, we were talking yesterday about some of the reasons to get married. And the comment was made, one of the reasons to get married is to prepare the family and men in particular for leadership roles in the church, to be elders and to be deacons. And I'm a little ambivalent on that. And I don't know how you're a little ambivalent. Maybe I'm a lot ambivalent on that. Certainly, I think one wonderful result of a godly marriage and family is it produces men and families who can take those leadership roles. But I'm awfully uncomfortable about telling our young people that one of the reasons they ought to get married is so they can be elders and deacons. That's a natural outgrowth of it, but there's scriptures, and we'll talk about them today, where Paul says if you don't get married, you're going to have more time for the Lord than if you do get married. But Paul wasn't anti-marriage. So I think it's a wonderful byproduct. And this comment was made in the context that young people, young families, just need to think about getting themselves prepared for leadership in the church. And I couldn't agree with that more. One of the most crying needs in the church is qualified leaders. And I say that to you women as much as I do to the men, because for every man that's not qualified, there's another man who's not qualified because of his wife or of his family. Ladies can't automatically qualify their husbands for leadership, but they can sure automatically disqualify them, in my humble opinion. Yes, ma'am.
I have kept many young men throughout the meetings, and a lot of them are concerned about choosing a wife that can precipitate them becoming elders and deacons. They have that on their mind.
Good. Good. They ought to have a few other things on their minds in the selection process too,
yeah.
But that certainly
if you
select a mate, if a girl selects a mate who she thinks has the potential to be an officer, and a boy selects a mate, a wife who he thinks has the potential of being an officer's wife, it's sure going to make a lot of things fall into place. It's sure going to make a lot of things fall into place. But boy, and I've said this before, and I know I'll say it again, when those hormones start pumping, the mind tends to shut down. And that's why we need to have these classes, so that we can instill some of this in the minds of people before their hormones start pumping. Because I'm not very good at talking someone out of marrying someone once they've decided they're going to. I just hold on to my hat and go along for the ride and pray for them. But if you can get them before all those hormones have kicked in, you can instill some thoughts that maybe stick more than we think. More than we think. The other comment that I had was real good, and I hope I wasn't out of place, but I made the comment about, you know, some people are just married to jerks, and some of you may be in that position. And I'll just stop that train of thought right there. But it was pointed out to me that if you find yourself or know someone in a position like that, that 1 Samuel chapter 25 is an excellent passage to go to, where we read about Abigail and married to that very, as the King James called him, a churlish man, a drunkard. And she is an excellent example of honoring her husband when her husband had very little honorable about him. And sometimes we're in the position, in reality, of honoring mates who aren't always honorable. Just like we're in the position of loving mates that aren't always lovable. Jay.
This goes back to the idea that it's so important to think about who you're choosing. Very seldom do people change character overnight.
That's true.
And the women, they have to think about the kind of person you're choosing. You look at their parents. What will they have in 10 years?
Very, very true. You know, it's kind of interesting. Maybe I wish our young people would give more serious thought to marriage, but if they really knew how important it was, there would be a lot more celibacy, because we'd be so scared we'd never get married. So God's figured this out, how to balance that out. And I don't want to scare young people out of getting married, but we do want to think. You know, I used to, for a long time, just to make a personal comment, didn't think that I gave... This is going to sound wrong, but... I didn't really think I gave marriage a lot of thought. I mean, it just happened, you know, and you meet this girl or boy and you're not going to be happy without them, so you get married. But now, looking back, I think a lot of things that I had been exposed to stuck in my mind more than I thought they had, so that when I actually went through that process, there was an unconscious but a very real sieve that sifted through a lot of things that I didn't realize. And maybe that's what we're trying to accomplish with some of the unmarried. I don't know that to be a fact, but I do believe it with my heart. Okay, anybody want to... I guess I go back here.
I'll
well, you can do both. We may just wheel you up closer.
Oh, I was going to say... I always stress, keep your reputation. If you don't, it'll backfire.
Okay. Very good. Keep your reputation. If you don't, it will backfire. Okay, now I need to move on just a little bit. But I, you know, each day this tends to happen on this subject because we've all got good thoughts and we want to share them, but we want to move through some of this material. Let me ask you this question. Let me make this statement and then see if you agree or disagree. God sends us our mates. If God wants us to get married, He'll send us someone. Agree or disagree? Disagree? Okay, I got one of those back there. Yeah, I disagree with that. And that doesn't mean that God can't be involved. And I don't know whether Rick's going to talk about providence of God or not. But that doesn't mean that God can't somehow providentially be involved. But this idea of there's only one person in the world for you, to me, just doesn't cut it. I mean, boy, it doesn't look, if there's only one person in the world for each of us, it would seem to me that probability would say very few of us would be married, because what's the chance of meeting that one person? Now, once you get married, then I like that statement, there's only one person for you. You know, sometimes people will ask me, or will wonder out loud as they're visiting with me, am I married to the right person? My answer is, if you've got a biblical marriage, you're married to the right person, and you're married to the one God wants you to be married, and you stay that way. Okay? Now, are you married to the absolute most perfect person in the world? Yes. I am, but I don't know about the rest of you. We'll talk about lying later. Okay? Okay. Dan will cover lying today, and there'll be a full opportunity for confession and repentance. Yeah, but that's the way we ought to feel about it, because once we've made that commitment, and we'll talk about that with the young people. But I do want to, and I want to share a few of the bullets that I was going to cover with them, because then you can reinforce them. But this idea that there's only one person in the world for you is terribly idealistic. I think most of us are compatible with multiple people, but when you find that special one, it's an interesting time in life, isn't it? Okay, now, see if I can remember how I did this. Okay, we're back on the family. Whoops. Boy, I got on a real roll there. You took my tape off. Page up. Okay. It starts with selection, and I think that's very, very true. It doesn't end with selection, but selection is an extremely important process, and that's what we'd like to talk a little bit about this morning. I would like your input from your experience. I'll try to share with you some of the things that I have observed and have learned. Okay, a lot of us grew up with this family. That's Ward, June, Wally, and the Beaver. June always came to the dining room for supper with earrings and high heels. I never saw Ward eat supper without a tie on. Just a little personal aside, some of you know my dad. He wore a tie mowing the yard. That's the beatenest thing I ever saw. I'd get on my bicycle and just ride, and I didn't want anyone to know. He just was so used to wearing a tie. But the reason I put this up here is that when we're thinking about a family, sometimes we have false ideas and false expectations. And I don't know any Ward and June Cleavers in real life. And I doubt I'd really want to live with them. I mean, they seemed like wonderful people, but they were almost too wonderful. As I said yesterday, the family's the place where we need to be able to let our hair down and to be ourselves. I'm not talking about being slovenly or slobby about it, but it is a time to relax. Now, this is a difficult thing sometimes for marriage, because in the dating process, if we're ever on our best behavior, it's while we're dating. You know, women or girls will spend 2 hours in front of the mirror just getting everything just right. Then after they get married and they start having kids, it may be 6 o'clock before they ever get out of their bathrobe at night. And men don't understand, you know, what's happened. Or the man is just always very polite and very proper during the dating process, and then she marries this guy, and all of a sudden we're it's couch potato time and t-shirt time and boxer shorts time, and it makes a very, very difficult thing for people to handle. Okay, I want us to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I didn't put these verses on the sheet on purpose, but I do want us to look at four verses in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 that we've got to remember. And these are not verses that you don't know. These are simply verses that we act like we don't know. And our problem is not so often not knowing. Our problem is usually acting like we don't know. Marriage is not for everyone. And our society has conditioned us, and even though we know better, we get socially conditioned so that if someone doesn't get married, we immediately start wondering what's wrong, and we feel sorry for that person, and we sometimes start asking, when are you going to get married? And we start trying to help that process along in an artificial sense. So I wanted to go back and capture verses 7 and 8, where Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, I would that all men were even as myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. There is nothing, I think, that can glorify God more than a man or a woman who chooses and has the ability to abstain from marriage and then uses all of that time and energy that marriage consumes in serving the Lord. And I don't want to get on my soapbox, but I know that it's awfully easy, especially for you ladies, to start wanting to be matchmakers and starting to, with good intentions, asking other girls or even boys who, when they start reaching late 20s and 30s, you know, come on, let's get married. It's also very easy for those of us in the church to organize our socializing and fellowship within the church to the extent that we unintentionally but realistically exclude people who aren't married. And we need to be very, very careful about that. Now, that's easy for me to say, and we just got to tie a string around our finger to remember that. But it is not a dishonor, nor is it an outcast not to be married. Paul even presents it in just the opposite light. The other two verses would be verses 32 and 33. But I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he pleaseth his wife. Paraphrased, marriage takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of work. And once you're married, you better apply the time and the work to it. But if you're able to contain yourself and have the gift of celibacy, and I believe it's a gift, then that time can be used so much more. Now, I'm delighted that Donna is with me this week, because she doesn't usually go with me, and I'm really delighted. So that's my disclaimer to what I'm going to say. But I and other people that travel and do the work, I think will agree that it makes a difference when our wives are with us. I tend to find myself trying to make sure I satisfy whatever her needs and wants are, and I'm a little bit less available to just go and counsel with this person and that person. Not that I can't do that, but it is a different ball game. And again, those of us that travel and preach, I think, are always happy to have our wives with us, but it sure makes a difference. I mean, I'm not even setting where I would set if she wasn't here. And it just makes quite a difference. It's good, but it just illustrates this verse in my estimation. So just be careful about that. And I'm going to stress with the young people, don't feel pressure to get married. Now, despite my saying that, they feel it. And if you've been single, well, if you've been single recently, you know exactly what I'm saying. But that's wrong. It shouldn't be that way. You should only get married if you have to. And I don't mean that because you've had a child out of wedlock. You should only get married if that's the only way you can be happy. That's the only reason I think a person should get married. Glenn. No, no. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I think that depends upon the situation in the couple. To answer your question, yes, she's gone with me on occasion, but it's rare rather than frequent. And that's the way we work. That doesn't mean that's the way you should work. If I'm having a Bible study with a young mother, a single mother, then I would be very inclined to take her with me just for propriety. I usually send her and let her do it. That's what I do, and then I don't go with her and mess her up. But it can work that way. It can work that way. It just takes a lot of judgment. Anybody else want to make a probing comment? Marvin? That's there's some truth to that. I have found usually in family marital problems, people are a little more free to talk and bare their soul if there's not a big crowd. And not that two is a crowd, but it just seems to work better for me. Doesn't mean that's the best way to do it. Looking for love in all the wrong places. Used to be a line out of a song when I was growing up, and that's probably why it stuck in my mind. But where we look for our mates is very important. You can meet your prospective mate at McDonald's, you can meet them at church, you can meet them in the neighborhood, but in general, you want to be looking in a wholesome environment for a wholesome mate, in my estimation. This one is the passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14. And you might turn to that since hopefully you're in 1 Corinthians. This is a passage that in some ways I believe has been taken out of context, but I think it also bears on this.
What was that verse?
2 Corinthians 6, 14. And that's the passage that exhorts us and the Corinthians, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness? Now, I don't believe that passage is exclusively talking about marriage. But I can't read that passage and understand it without having it have a bearing on marriage. And I believe that passage is laying down a principle that as Christians we are going to be more fulfilled and more successful when we have ourselves bound, whether it's in a business dealing or in a matrimonial situation, with a fellow believer. Now, I don't personally take the position that it is a sin to marry someone out of the church. And I know when I say that, there are people here who will disagree with me. And I would rather you disagree with me on the conservative side than on the liberal side. But I always tell people that at a minimum, marry someone that you can be spiritually compatible with and that you can work with. And the reason I don't quite take the position that it's an absolute abomination to marry someone out of the church is I just go to so many small congregations where the young people seemingly just don't have a lot of Christian options. Now, we can make the argument that they ought to come to meetings like this and have those options And that's a good argument. But at a minimum, don't begin a marriage with two different diametrically opposed spiritual views, because it's like building a house and you and your mate start on two ends from two different blueprints, and then you wonder why the houses don't fit together in the middle. It's because you're trying to male build a godly house and they don't understand that. And it's always wiser, if you can, to find someone that's in the church or work with your fiancé prior to the marriage to get those things resolved. We've all just seen absolute disasters when people thought, I'll marry them and I'll change them and we'll live happily ever after. And that has happened. But for every time that happens, there's got to be 10 times where we marry them, we don't change them, and we don't live happily ever after. Anybody want to comment on that passage or on that concept? Joanne. Absolutely. Joanne's comment was, even if you marry someone in the church, there will be different maturity levels, and that has to be factored in. And marrying in the church is no guarantee. I mean, I'm just looking at faces that can give testimonial after testimonial how that doesn't always work. I've gone to congregations that have had three elders, and I sit there and I look at them, and none of those men were in the church when they were married, and their wives brought them into the church, and they're just powerful Christians. So I'm not taking absolutes, but we are, I believe, looking at a principle that in general will serve us the best. The best. Yes. Her comment was this idea of spiritual compatibility. You ought to start thinking about that reasonably early in the dating process, not the week of the wedding. I'm paraphrasing what she said, but I think that's appropriate.
On camp out that he encouraged the kids, why would you even date someone you wouldn't even consider marrying? But my other comment was, as a parent, shame on us if we don't present opportunities for our teenage kids or younger to go to meetings like this and meet other Christian people, to have someone to choose from other than your small town.
Okay. She made two comments. The first one was attributed to Mike Manning, but I'll repeat it anyway. It was the concept that why would you even date someone that you wouldn't consider marrying? That has some ring to it, but I will take a slight exception to that. You may not know whether you would consider marrying them until you've dated them for a little while, because the dating process, I would think, or if I can remember it, is an opportunity to get to know. But once you find out it's not someone that you're spiritually compatible with, to continue dating them only runs the risk of getting emotionally involved into something that you may not dig yourself out of. Her other comment, and you could hear it, and I want to just amen it. At meetings like this, whatever, if we want our children to find a mate in the Lord, we need to expose our children to potential mates. You can't pick your child's mates, and I don't think you want to, but I don't care whether you want to, you can't. But expose them to it, and then it's in their hands. And pray. Yeah, Lee?
Could you comment on 1 Corinthians 7, verses 12 through 15, in the context of 2 Corinthians 6?
His question was, would I comment on 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 12 through 16, in conjunction with the passage there in 2 Corinthians 6? Yes, I will, and we'll probably come back to this when we do our MDR next week, marriage, divorce, and remarriage.
I won't be here next week.
Okay, well, it'll go pretty well then. Uh, Now I lost my train of thought. Oh, I think there's two extenuating circumstances. Number one, you remember I didn't bind 2 Corinthians 6:14 and say it's an absolute sin. But I think the people Paul was writing to here in 1 Corinthians 7 were largely people who were probably married prior to them coming into the church. And that's a totally different situation than marrying once we're a Christian. If you come into the church and are married to a man or a woman who doesn't want to come into the church, when you come into the church, we're not to leave them. That's the teaching here in 1 Corinthians 7. We're to work with them. We're not to leave them. It's not an excuse for dissolving a marriage. I believe there's only two reasons to dissolve a marriage, and we'll do that when Lee's not here. Glenn. Are you going to be here next week? Okay.
Sister Foote makes a comment in the mind of all of our responsibility is tell them the stories of the Old Testament of the children of Israel. What was the repercussion because they married the daughters? Why would they have heard their story in the first place with water because of the decision to marry?
Sure. There's the Bible's just replete of matrimonial decisions that have turned out to be spiritually disastrous. Solomon, I couldn't name them all. Yes, sir.
I have one comment. What usually gets left out is the children. Bringing two children up and one parent is an unbeliever and the other one, you got two directions.
Sure. Absolutely. His comment was when the two parents aren't spiritually united, it really causes problems in the parenting sector. And again, this isn't an absolute, but we've all seen it time and time again. If the mother goes to church and the dad doesn't, the kids come to church. But once the boys hit teenage, then dad has the pull, and we often lose them. There are exceptions to that, but that happens tragically. Yes, Brother Grantham.
I was one of the unbelievers that was fortunate enough to marry a Christian.
Well, you not only were fortunate enough to marry a Christian, you were fortunate enough to listen to her and the Word of God. Okay, his comment was what really got him over the hump was when their first child was adopted. And children often do make a difference. I wish they made more difference in some of us. But I've seen men quit smoking, quit drinking, come into the church, start attending more than just Sunday morning twice a month, and women, when they suddenly realize the responsibility they've got for those children. And they should. They ought to do it earlier, but if you're ever going to do it, you ought to do it when you're a child. Dave?
I don't disagree with anything that's been said so far, but I would like to just add, when you look around in other countries where there are arranged marriages,
yes.
The last lifetime, the thing that seems to be common in those is that there's nothing such as divorce. It's a decision that is going to be there. I didn't fill out an application to tell God or my family what type of sister I'd like to have. Yet,
okay, yeah. Making a marriage work is a decision that you make. Absolutely. Nobody here has a perfect marriage because nobody here is perfect. I doubt you've got a perfect mate, but even if you did, you don't have a perfect marriage because you're not perfect. And it comes back to a commitment. Dave made a comment, you can't divorce your sister. I know what he means by that, but you can almost divorce your family. You can just sever all ties with them. But that's not appropriate. You know, we don't want to live in a society where we pick mates. I would like to live in a society where there's no divorce, but I don't even think that's the ultimate, because you could live in a society where there's no divorces and have 80% of the marriages bad. I mean, I've seen people stay together and not get divorced, but not have a good marriage. That's what I'm saying. I'm glad they don't get divorced, but that's still not the ultimate. We want to have good marriages. We want to have good marriages. One more, and then I got to move.
I was going to say, when you're trying to say emotionally you're divorced, but
Yeah, emotionally you can be divorced, even though you're not technically divorced. That's a good way to say that. Oh. I've touched on this, and I was going to spend a little more time on it specifically, but it's kind of gotten woven in. I entitled this The Conversion Sham, and let me just describe to you what I mean by that. And there are exceptions to this, so don't anyone be offended. But this is the scenario, and it usually happens when the girl is a Christian and her prospective husband isn't. And you can almost feel it in your bones. One of the stipulations is you've got to become a Christian before we get married. And when a boy or a man wants to get married, he'll agree to anything. That's about the bottom line. They get married, and not too long after they're married, or maybe immediately, you no longer see him. Now, it could happen in reverse, but usually it's in that direction. And my admonition to all of us and with the young people is it's not simply enough to get someone to say, I believe. It's not simply enough to get them wet in a baptistry. We're talking about having them to a maturity level so that you and they can be compatible and work together in a Christian life. Okay. Walton's Mountains Fantasy, this is a concept of some of the false expectations we often have about marriage. The Warden June Cleaver slide touched on this. This probably happens especially amongst women and young girls, but it happens differently among men. You have this idyllic view of the two-story house and the white picket fence, and everybody says goodnight to everybody at the same time, and then John Boy turns out the lights. That's not reality. You know it, and I know it. But I've seen young couple after young couple expecting marriage to do things it was never intended to do. For instance, marriage was never intended to solve all your problems. And a lot of people enter into marriage thinking, this marriage is going to solve my problems. Everything will be better once I get married. Everything bad in my life is going to disappear if I could just find the right husband or the right wife, and my spouse will make me happy forever. I believe all of those things to be false. The same problems you had, with maybe the exception of loneliness, are going to come right into your marriage, so you need to resolve them and work them through, and your spouse isn't going to make you happy. You're going to have to do that. Your spouse might contribute to your happiness, and you might be happy with your spouse, but don't expect our mates to do things. Sometimes we expect our mates to do things that they simply can't do, and then we're disappointed in them when that doesn't happen. And really, the disappointment ought to occur when we look in the mirror. Okay. It's been said time and time again, and it's trite, but I guess it's not so trite, I won't say it again. Probably the only person you and I are really going to change is ourselves. Now, that doesn't mean we can't have an influence on our mates, but don't take that to the bank and expect it to happen, because you're going to be disappointed time after time after time. Did you start to say something, Janice?
When you were talking about the well-meaning comments that people make to older singles, I received many of those, not being married till 35, but I did receive one very understanding and wise remark that I've always remembered, and that is that it's better to be single than to be married to the wrong person. And specifically, I wanted to respond to your comment about loneliness. Your loneliness can be worse after you're married if you're married to the wrong person.
Okay, I'm sure you're right. I haven't experienced that, but I'm sure you're right.
It's my judgment that we're getting dangerously close, though, to saying that don't expect a good family, don't look forward to having an ideal family where you have a husband and a wife who love one another, who love their children, who love their family. And I think these are good things to look forward to. I understand the problem with unrealism, but yet to want to have a family that is close, like the Waltons perhaps were in their shows, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. And I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that that's going to be a rarity in all aspects, because I believe all families and all marriages have speed bumps. The issue isn't whether or not we have problems. The issue is how you handle them. That's the issue. And how to put this back on. Okay. And, you know, I feel a little bit like I'm not the right person to be up here in this regard. And I don't want to embarrass my wife, but we've been married 26 years, and if you ask me to give you a list of our marital problems, I have trouble coming up with one. Now, she could give you a long list, but I have trouble coming up with one. I mean, it's just been smooth. I've loved every minute of it. I wouldn't trade it for anything, but I know they happen. I know they do happen. And many of you could say exactly the same thing, and I'm thankful for that.
If you wasn't up there, you'd probably be able to come up with five.
I'm sorry. What to look for in a wife, followed by what to look for in a husband, and how can we help? Well, I think some of the things we've already touched on, what to look for. I've got a handout that I'll give you in just a minute, but I want you to be looking up here. And I don't know where I got this. Someone in this audience may have put this together, and I just osmotically put it in my file. I'd like to give somebody credit for it because I think it's nice, and I'm going to use it as a worksheet with the young people. Excuse me, Dave. But it's kind of and I don't know if you can all see that in the back, so I'll give you a handout, but just bear with me here a little bit. It's just kind of a little checklist for some of the young people and some of us that are a little older to look at. And it's a checklist on preparing for marriage. Does anybody know where I got this? Dan Huff? Okay, well then I've got good sources. I just couldn't remember. And the top sentence says, to get a marriage license, all most people have to do is prove how old they are. And that's true. And it's kind of amazing to me that many couples spend more time preparing for the marriage ceremony than they do for the marriage. Now, we'll spend weeks and months preparing for a 20-minute ceremony and maybe 20 minutes preparing for getting ready for life. But it's kind of a checklist to have the young people and us. I'm going to give you a copy of this, and maybe you can use it in your own congregations if you're teaching young people. It asks questions like, how long have you known each other? Does this person meet the standards you have in mind before you met them? In other words, is this just a physical infatuation? Whoa. Thank you. Is this just a physical infatuation, or is it something that is deeper than that? Where do they want to live? You know, two young people could meet each other at this meeting. One's from the Midwest and one's from California. Something's got to give. You can't have a husband and a wife in two places. What are their occupational ambitions? Number five, how well do you know their family? You're marrying their family as well. Now that'll send a chill up some of your spines, I know. What's their mother and father like? I'm going to skip down to a little bit. Number nine, is this family stable in the Lord emotionally, health-wise? 11, is the mate you're considering stable in the Lord? Do they have any bad habits? Do they have a temper? 14, can she cook, sew, make clothes, care for children, manage money? I never will forget a farmer in southern Iowa. They've been married like 60 years, and he just laughs. He said, when we got married, I thought she could cook, and she thought I had money, and we were both wrong. But it's worked out. But, you know, things like that are kind of important. Number 16, well, the 15, has he changed jobs often and does he manage money well? Ladies, that needs to be something you really consider. Number 16, will the wife be employed outside of the home? That's one that I really encourage people to have some discussion on before they get married. My personal position is it's not wrong for a woman to work outside of the home as long as her family always comes first and as long as it's not simply to garner up luxuries that are really totally unnecessary. If a woman can be at home with the children, if at all possible, that is absolutely the best thing to do. And ladies, and I'll tell the girls this, one thing to consider is not whether your prospective mate is wealthy, but does he earn enough money that if you need to stay home with the kids, you can. Now, there are extenuating circumstances to that, but I believe that a Christian husband has the responsibility to do everything in his power to provide for the necessities of his family so the woman doesn't have to work outside the home. Who will manage the money? One of the great chapters in a book is as the author takes that line, till death do us part, and he changes it to till debt do us part. And money is a real problem. Two people have had independent finances, especially if we're talking about people that have been single for a while. They both got checkbooks. Who's going to manage the money? Is the wife going to crawl in every night and beg for $10, or is the husband going to crawl in and beg for his allowance? I'm being a little facetious, but it's a real tug of war because money is power in most relationships, and that's what this really boils down to. And then there's some other things on the bottom of this that we've talked about, the origin of marriage, the reasons to get married. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. Before you get away, let me have Glenn and Dwayne hand these out if they would. And we'll make more copies if you need them. But I want to give all of the kids a copy of this because I think it's good. That's what I think. Anybody have a question or a comment? We just never have enough time, but maybe we've got as much time as we need. Lee?
When you get to the point of marrying in the Lord?
The first or second time?
Either.
Okay. You want me to comment on that?
Not right now. But
okay. He wanted to know if I would comment on the concept of marrying in the Lord. I think I kind of did on the first marriage. You may be thinking about that passage in 1 Corinthians where it's talking about the second marriage.
I've got all kinds of tracts for young people if they want it.
Okay, she has all kinds of tracts on this if you'd be interested in it. Anybody? Leah.
I didn't realize the expectations that I had. And after we were married, the expectations came out. And I didn't even realize that I had those expectations.
Did Dave meet them?
Probably not.
Okay. Okay. You know, it's wonderful to be able to jest about this, but sometimes when I do this in smaller groups, I look out there and I think we're going to go over things and people are going to come thinking they have a good marriage, and by the time we get done talking about it, they're going to go home thinking they don't have a good marriage, and I don't want to cause any divorces. I haven't that I know of, but I guess that's always a possibility. It's always a possibility. Oh, I've got some more. Okay, if you'll bring the extras back to me, then I'll know how many I need to make for the kids, for the young people. Okay, have we got the kids coming? Is Charles going to let them loose? We'll take about 2 minutes to let the classes come back, because we're going to have a prayer for our noon meal, and I'd like for us to be all together. If anyone has a question or a comment on anything we've been discussing, that'd be fine. Thank you, gentlemen. Thursday, when we get together, we're going to be dealing with the differences between men and women. It's kind of a nice session. There are a couple. Is Mike's class let out yet?
They pushed the black button then.
Does that ring for there?
That rings for